Good afternoon, and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet, and I'm here in the studio with the always on-time Patty Fink.
Yes, you are.
And welcome to, what show are we?
This is called Lambda Weekly.
Thank you. Lambda Weekly, and I'm David Taffet, and I'm with Patty Fink. Laurent, we think, is off today. I don't remember if he told us.
I don't need
to. Okay, so
he's not here right now. That's an indication.
I think one of our guests forgot to come. Here's the true story. I book our guests and I write them on this calendar that I have on my desk. I talked to Portia and I completely forgot to write it down. But what's embarrassing is I never do that. I mean, for years, just it's always on my calendar. Our topic is Alzheimer's today. So it's a little bit embarrassing. Our guests today are Portia Cantrell. She's with the Coalition for Aging LGBT.
No, she's not.
She's not with the Coalition for Aging LGBT. She is with?
I am with Silver Pride Project. And it's not that David forgot that. It's that I haven't talked to him in a while and he wasn't aware of that. So it's not early onset.
It might be. And Deborah Adams, who's with the Alzheimer's Association. Welcome, Deborah and Portia.
Hey, how are you?
I'm not so good. So leave it to me to do a funny show on Alzheimer's. Have you dealt with Alzheimer's in your family, Patty?
We've had, in my extended family, definitely. We've had an immediate family instance of Parkinson's dementia, which may be similar. I don't know that it's entirely similar, but and it's really rough. When you see a loved one going through terrors, it's real for them.
Yep.
It may not be real, but it's real for them. And it's a tough situation to comfort them through those situations and get them back to a place where they're not afraid, you know. And so I don't know how well that
we'll talk about some of those things.
Alzheimer's.
We're going to talk about some of those things. I dealt with it. My father had Alzheimer's. He never progressed beyond the first stage, which was a blessing. And Brian's stepfather right now is dealing with Alzheimer's, and he's progressing quickly. Deborah, tell us a little bit about names. Patty makes fun of me because I write down my own name sometimes so that I remember.
He does. He writes it down. He says, my name is David Taffet, and I'm here with...
I just have a script in front of me. Deborah, tell us what Alzheimer's actually is, because not all dementia is Alzheimer's.
That's very true.
Like Patty's dementia is not Alzheimer's.
Right. Well, it's a dementia, but it's not an Alzheimer's form of dementia. So, Patty, we do have something in common in that my father also had Parkinson's disease, which by the end of his life rolled into what we call Lewy body, which
yes.
is a Parkinson's and Alzheimer's disease combination.
That's exactly
and
what
those,
we experienced. Yes.
And those terrors are very real. Mm-hmm. You're right. They're very real for them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very challenging. My mother had vascular dementia. So dementia is an umbrella term. Just like cancer is an umbrella term, and then you have breast cancer, you have prostate cancer, you have lung cancer, you have different... Dementia is the umbrella term for those that have a neurological situation going on within the brain that is impacting a person's ability to have daily function, their memory, their ability to even take care of themselves, safety issues. So dementia is the umbrella term for that. Alzheimer's disease makes up 70 to 80% of all dementia. But just because someone or a doctor says you have dementia, it does not mean that you have Alzheimer's disease. It's very specific. And it actually impacts different parts of the brain with that. There are also dementias that are temporary, such as if you have a surgery and you go under anesthesia, sometimes as you're coming out of anesthesia, you have a period of time where it's actually a dementia impact because you're not able to remember and you're not able to take care of yourself in that time. But over time, then those type of temporary dementias obviously will diminish and you will be able to function again. Unfortunately, with Alzheimer's disease, that is not the case. Mm-hmm. And Alzheimer's disease not only makes up 70 to 80% of all dementias, but right now 5.4 million people in the United States have this diagnosis, and about 33% of them do not know that they have the diagnosis because there is such a stigma with this disease that physicians are not disclosing it to the patient nor the family member. And so that it's a real challenge that the Alzheimer's Association is trying to help overcome.
Now, what is the average life expectancy for somebody with Alzheimer's? And I'm not sure that there's a real answer to that, because you asked me when we diagnosed my father, well, there's the time we put him into memory care. Definitely he was diagnosed then. He was getting bad for a while. I saw some signs earlier, and thinking back, I can probably go back 3 to 5 years and see some things that were wrong.
Right, right. So that's very common. I think the better question to maybe answer, or the approach to take with that, David, is to say that the cells, the neurons within the brain are dying in a person that has dementia, Alzheimer's disease, okay? So that process can begin as early as 20 years before we actually see symptoms. Typically, the first symptom is memory loss, mm-hmm. being challenged in that area. So you can have the degeneration of the brain cells taking place 10 to 20 years before anyone actually begins to notice that the memory loss or the other. We have what we call 10 warning signs, and maybe as part of this program we can go over.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how do you know somebody has Alzheimer's? Because the one thing that we didn't recognize was with my father was memory loss. Now, with Brian's stepfather, there's memory loss there. And that's been the main thing, I think. But with my father, memory loss was not the thing. The week he died, he knew who I was.
Right.
Which is unusual.
So there's also times within even Alzheimer's disease that right before an individual's death, they may have an awakening type of thing. That's kind of a whole nother part of us that is, you know, coming back, taking care of whatever business they need to take care of it before they process on.
And I think that's true too for not just just Alzheimer's, but other types of. There's a burst and an elan, if you will, you know, of energy and cognitive function. Mm-hmm. That at least in my experience with older people who are near death, and that's I think.
Do you know,
universal.
With my father though, there really was not as severe a memory loss as there were other symptoms. Mm-hmm. He and I would talk on the phone regularly. Now, sometimes he would yell at me, "How come you haven't called me in 3 weeks?" We talked this morning. The real short term, he'd forget. Mm-hmm. But we still talked and had normal conversations, as normal as I can have. And I'm saying, you never met my father, Patty, but you think I'm nuts.
Oh my God!
Yeah, me talking to my father was that was something. So, what are some of the warning signs?
The Alzheimer's Association has these posted on our website at alz.org. If anyone is interested in looking at the background on these, but the first one that you typically see with Alzheimer's disease is memory loss. Mm-hmm. But it's not so much just forgetting your keys, it's memory loss that impacts your daily life to the point where you can't retrace your steps. You can't go back and try and, oh, that's right. You don't have that recall. So it really is impacting your daily activity.
But it's not like I've just turned, I'm in my 50s now, and I had some lunch this week with a friend who's just in her 50s as well. And something we've all sort of noticed is like you forget words. Like I had to tell Aaron the other day, you know, could you hand me that thing that that you shred cheese with. I couldn't get the word greater.
Right.
You know, and we all kind of laugh about it because it's happening to all my friends my age, where you just can't grab the word.
I have a better one.
But that's not what you're talking about.
Well, because you were able to just now say the word, it's a greater, because you have that still, the ability to still recall that, you might not be able to do it in the moment, but it is still there for you, then no, that is not the memory loss that we're talking about with Alzheimer's disease. With Alzheimer's disease, they may have been able to use the grader at one time, know what it is, call it the grader, but at this point in time, they don't have any idea what that is.
Gotcha.
You know, or the function of it. So
but
that's
kind
of
is that
difference.
A first step toward that? No.
No.
Okay.
That, and there's a lot of other things that could be causing that. Just being 50, since I'm a woman of 60, I'll share this. That. Part of the research that's being done, because women are impacted twice as likely as men to have Alzheimer's. Yeah, two-thirds of all Alzheimer's disease is in women. And so because of that, there's studies being done about, you know, our menopause, about just our physiology, seeing if that does impact it. Right now, the most common research is that because we age longer than men, you know, that's age is the highest risk factor for Alzheimer's disease. But because these other things are going on with women, and to give you a little hope there, that, you know, at 50 I was doing all the same thing too, and now at 60 I'm clearer. It's very interesting because I've come on the other side of some things and I'm clear. So there's hope with that.
Okay, good. We're going through the eye of the storm now.
Yes.
Okay, that works.
But some of the other warning signs are problems with the language. So they're not able to recall that greater. They would not know what that is at all. Disorientation with time and place. So if you start seeing someone that is on a day like this, they're all bundled up in winter coats and scarves and different things like that, and they truly think that that is what's necessary to keep them warm outside because they're disoriented with that. We also have a situation called sundowning, where they're up all night long. They get their day and their night mixed up. That's very common with an individual that is diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. Just poor or decreased judgment in general. This is where driving becomes such a challenge and hazard. There's also an individual with Alzheimer's disease typically loses their colorblind. They become colorblind. And so seeing that red and green light, as that's what's impacted in colorblindness, becomes a very dangerous situation.
I will tell my mother-in-law that one, because we can't get her to take the driver's license
away.
She won't let him drive alone.
Okay, well.
But, yeah.
And there are programs to help with that. I do want to share that, you know, the Alzheimer's Association has a helpline that's open 24 hours a day. It's available in 180 different languages. And if somebody's having trouble with that conversation, they can call and have a care consultation and get help with that. Also, we're very fortunate here in the Dallas area. Baylor Hospital has a program for senior drivers that can come along and be a partner in having that conversation with a family. So it's a very good resource for people.
And that's I think that's really tough, because independence is a big thing. And I know if someone to yank my independence today, I would be having a fit. And you know what I mean? To finally just let go and somehow be dependent on someone else.
Right.
I mean, that's a tough thing just for any adult to go through. And so I imagine that's really, really hard. I know in my family, we've had relatives who've had to take the keys away, and it's just a wrenching kind of time. So I feel for everybody who has to go through that on both ends.
Well, from the time that we're born practically to the age of 16, what is the greatest goal we have in life? We want to get our driver's license, right? And so it's very, very true. Okay. Having to have that conversation is very, very difficult. And I know for our family, we actually had the doctor write a prescription for us that said, while you're on this medicine, you cannot drive. And it worked. It was just one of those little tricks, but it worked. Dad didn't argue with us. Mm-hmm. Once he got his doctor to tell him that right. It was not okay to drive anymore. So, yeah.
Yeah, that didn't work with my father's doctor. The two of them didn't talk to each other, basically. So, doctor calls me, tells me he thinks my father had a stroke. I said, when? I just talked to him. He said, you're kidding. I said, he said, when? I said, 30 minutes ago. He said, I saw him about noon. He was completely unresponsive. I said, did you ask him a question? He said, no. I said, then he didn't have anything to answer. I had to go down there, and I said, okay, so he's having some congestive heart failure. Would some exercise be good? Yes. I said, tell him. Some exercise would be good. I said, do you understand that? He said, yes. I said, no, don't tell me. Tell the doctor. And I'm sitting there in the middle of this ridiculous conversation. Can he swim? Well, if he knows how. I said, he used to be a lifeguard. Well, yeah, sure, he can swim. I said, okay, tell him. Swimming would be good. I said to my father, did you understand what the doctor just told you? He said, uh-huh. But it was like, it was the most ridiculous conversation, but that older generation, they respect doctors, they don't question them.
They respect doctors and clergy.
And don't question them. Uh-huh. We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink.
Yes.
See, I remembered who you are now. Our guests are Portia Cantrell. We think Brian Parman is in the parking lot, and Deborah Adams is with the Alzheimer's Association. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
Yeah, I was listening.
I forgot. That was a short message. The thing is, our board operator, Josh, sent me a note just before the show that something came up at school. He won't be here. I didn't have my glasses, so I didn't read it exactly. But I forgot. So Josh usually does that. That's why the board usually runs more smoothly than this. This is our Alzheimer's show. Our guests are Portia Cantrell, who said, oh, no, I'm not talking. Yes, you are. Brian Parman is with CC Young Senior Living, and Deborah Adams is with the Alzheimer's Association. And I remembered all that.
Bravo.
Thank you. We were just talking about some of the warning signs of Alzheimer's. One of the things that I noticed, and this is when I thought for the first time, uh-oh, was my father lived in Palm Beach County, and his mother, about 40 years earlier, lived in Miami Beach. They're about 60 miles apart. So whenever I'd go down to visit him, we'd do something. So this one time I said, let's go down to Miami, we'll have lunch, and you can show me where she used to live. And he knew the first exit on I-95. He knew the second exit. We're still in Palm Beach County. Then we're in Broward County, and he's getting nervous. And we're way into Broward County, and he's panicking. We finally got to Dade County, and that's where Miami and Miami Beach are. And I said, okay, I need you to help me. Where do we cross over into Miami Beach? And he's panicking. Oh, yeah, you make a turn right here. And he had the exact right turn, got me straight down Collins Avenue and over to his mother's apartment, and I recognized from seeing it once when I was 6 years old, that was her apartment. And he had it exactly when he was there, because that was an old memory. But the thing that I noticed was that panic. Mm-hmm. When he wasn't someplace that he knew.
Right. So that's someone that is having to deal with Alzheimer's disease or even other related dementias, the familiar is very, very important mm-hmm. to them. It gives them a context for their life. And I'm really proud of him that he was able to do what he was able to do for you with that. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure it caused a lot of anxiety within mm-hmm. him. And
yeah, and it was the kind of thing I never thought going down I-95 to Miami was right. going to be an anxiety-producing mm-hmm. issue when he'd lived in Florida for, at that point, 15 or 20 years already. So it just never occurred to me. So,
Well, this is one of the things that the Alzheimer's Association is currently working very closely with all of the first responders right now from Hurricane Harvey. So we, because you have people that are now displaced, you've got people with memory loss that are having to live in shelters or live in other places. And so that disorientation can cause great agitation to them. So the one of the things that the association has done is we have contacted all the shelters here in Dallas that are going to be taking people and offered our first responder training. We're giving them information about our helpline, and we're going in and seeing what we can do to help the volunteers to identify the 10 warning signs so that if they need to get help from their medical staff, because every emergency shelter has a medical, you know, component to it, that they are aware and educated about how to do that. And there's five chapters in the state of Dallas, and we're all reaching out to do that. So, but people don't think about that. They don't, you know, they don't think about, oh my goodness, you're going to displace somebody. What is that going to do to disrupt their calm, peace? Right. You know, their
it was utter panic in the car until we got to a place that he understood where he was and really knew where he was. And an even funnier example of having the back memories and not the current memories, he wanted to go to a Hungarian restaurant. And it was somewhere between Palm Beach and Miami. He hadn't been to this restaurant since he took his mother, because his mother was Hungarian. And he said, he gave me directions, and I figured, okay, whatever. When we don't find it, because this place has not been in existence for 40 years, we'll go someplace else. Make a right, make a left. And this is when his Alzheimer's had progressed, because we went there from his memory care facility. Make a right, make a left. Yeah, at that traffic light right there, make a left and go into the parking lot in the back. Okay, so we'll go into the parking lot. It's this Hungarian restaurant.
Yeah.
We walked in, and in fluent Hungarian, he started speaking to the waiters and the owners of the place. I hadn't heard him speak Hungarian since his mother died, you know, 40 years ago.
Yeah, that's very common. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Well, no, my mom, like your father, has dementia, and it's really an interesting thing to see those memories or those moments come where there's complete clarity, and sometimes it does take you by surprise. Your story just makes me think of the first time, and I was dreading it, that I'd find myself with my mom and have her not really know who I was. And that day came one afternoon when we were going to the dentist, and we were driving up 114, and, you know, all was well. She always enjoys getting out. It's so important to have that stimulation and see the sky, and she'll notice the buildings. And then she looked at me and said, how did we hook up? And hook up is not a word that she would ever use. And I just looked at her and I thought, well, so you, I'm just curious, you got in the car with me. Did you not know who I was? And she's like, well, I know you, but I'm not really sure. And you could tell, like, I mean, it wasn't panic, but the context of which she knew me. And she's like, well, just how did you find me? And so then it was not as bad as I had anticipated. And a lot of that I would hold credit to the Alzheimer's Association and to the many folks who have kind of helped through, like, your story. Make me more comfortable, so that when it did, I just had to explain to her a little bit about her life story. Give her some context of what we were doing and where we were going. And she was like, oh my gosh, well, my mom will be excited that I have kids. You know, it was hysterical in a very strange way. But then there's complete other times where we're together and we're talking all about her life. And, you know, I'll ask her where she's at, and she'll be like, oh, well, we're in Kentucky, right? And, you know, for that moment, I just agree with her.
You're in Kentucky.
We are in Kentucky.
That moment in time, aren't you? Yeah.
But
that's what we recommend.
At one point, when my father was in the hospital, they asked him a series of questions. And he was in Florida. Where are you? I'm in New York. Who's your wife? And he gave my mother's name. And my mother died in 1976. Mm-hmm. Do you know who the president is? And he was just squirming. And Bush was president at the time. And he was squirming. And I said, he knows. Because you could tell he was just getting angry and just couldn't come out with the name. But it's interesting when they're very clear on old memories. I mean, especially when he was speaking fluent Hungarian, which isn't an easy language, and literally had not heard him speak it since I was a kid.
And it's so important to really, like, tap into whatever the person's passionate about. And, you know, one of the things that I was hoping I could drill out to people in, out in the audience is just that when you're with somebody with Alzheimer's, whether it's music, which is one of the last things to go, or if that person's into Hungarian food, or if they were a painter, or even if they weren't, I just discovered that my mom loves to paint. Mm-hmm. You know, but finding something to help them connect and get a little bit lost in, I mean, you can really untap some beautiful things. And
apparently my father liked sex because I was in close touch with the people who ran the facility, and they said, we might have a problem. I said, oh, what is it? And they called me about everything. Well, your father met somebody. I said, well, that's good. He shouldn't be alone. Well, he's been spending nights in her room. And I said, oh, is that a problem? And she said, well, not for us, but the families sometimes object. And I said, object? I hope my genes came from that side of the family. He's 87.
Sure.
So
you'll often find, you know, sometimes, I mean, the filter, I would say, goes away when you're working with people with Alzheimer's. So you might find that people will say things that they might not have in their 20-year-old self have ever said, mm-hmm. or they might be appalled that they said them, or they might just act in a more bold mm-hmm. way. The filter is definitely gone, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, as we talk about our 10 warning signs, changes in mood, changes in behavior. That's mm-hmm. definitely one of the warning signs also.
Let's go back to those. We started out, we did memory loss. We could just run down where the stuff we've covered. And
okay, we've talked about memory loss that disrupts daily life. We've talked about the difficulty with performing normal tasks. If I used to bake a cake by memory, can't do it anymore, that type of thing. Problems with language, recalling words, recalling names, but to the point where you are unable to do it.
And not even knowing, once you have the word, what it means.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. Like, you do not recognize that a pen is a pen and have no idea what that is for. Mm-hmm. It's an object at that point. We talked about disorientation to time and place, poor or decreased judgment, and that's, we talked a little bit about the driving with that. Problems with abstract thinking. This is where a lot of people see this in their workplace. So I used to be an accountant, was great with numbers at one point in my life, and now all of a sudden I can't even add for my checkbook. Mm. That's that type of thing that you might notice and see. And then misplacing things. Now, we've all done the lay down the keys, lay down the readers, don't know where they are anymore, but we usually are able to retrace our steps to find them. But a person with Alzheimer's disease just does not have that memory recall to be able to do that. Then, like you were talking about, Brian, the filter, changes in mood or behavior that takes place, and then changes in personality. So we often hear individuals that someone will say, you know, my wife used to, like, be so prim and proper, and now she curses like a sailor. That kind of comment is very common mm-hmm. With individuals as they're progressing through the disease.
Patty and used to be charming.
Actually, my sister's encountered this. She's kind of hosting an older couple who are who needed a place to stay for a very mm-hmm. temporary period of time, and their relatives live a few houses down. And they were talking one evening, and the older man, who she learned from the relatives, has early onset Alzheimer's. He was talking about his brother-in-law, the relative down the street, and basically said, you know, he's a great guy, really, you know, grateful that he's helped us with so many things in my life. And then the very next sentence was, I hate his guts.
Oh, gosh.
All of them just kind of went, okay.
The gamut, right.
And he has early onset.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Okay, I was going to ask.
What else should anybody look for?
Well, you know, I wanted to throw in there, in my experience, it took my father's passing for my family to kind of mm-hmm. truly uncover that mom was having issues. And at first, we as a family unit thought that it was grief that we were seeing, the bills that were piled on the table, which isn't a normal thing that a person would do. But then it was that the pilot light had gone out on the stove, and she didn't do anything about it. And a neighbor actually uncovered that. And none of us were living in the area where she was. And finally, as we started to put it together, it was like, oh, Dad had been masking so many things.
With bills, my father couldn't tell the difference between bills and solicitations. So I was a member of the Sierra Club and the NRA, thanks to a number of solicitations. And I just said to him, it's your money, spend it on what you want, but pick a side. And he just wasn't getting, though, this is a bill, this is your, know, you have to pay, this is your carrying charge at your condo, this is, and so that was a big warning sign to me.
It's so important that you get things financially in order and get that medical power of attorney as you kind of know that this is happening, especially if it's early on. We found ourselves in a situation where a caller who had been ringing my mom almost every minute, somebody who was out there scamming, trying to get money, and actually she got into a cab from the senior living facility she was living in that they sent for her, took her to the bank, and thank God the teller knew my mom, knew my brother, and had the wherewithal to call him to say, something's odd, your mom seems really strange.
I had a similar situation with a bank teller.
It's so, I mean, but it takes a village. It truly does. And a lot of the training that the Alzheimer's Association is doing, even out in the business community, to help people be aware of these 10 signs. Because once you know someone with Alzheimer's and you're around a few people like it, I think that person's on my mom's playground. I can tell, you know, there's just things you pick up on. But getting that stuff in order is so important, and taking the checkbook away for us was a big deal, like the keys you were talking about earlier.
Some of the suggestions that we would make in this, because is one, here in the Dallas area, the Senior Source has a program that is specifically designed to help fight against elder abuse and financial abuse like that. The other thing, too, is that, you know, managing your money, just like driving, is also a very key to independence. I mean, it's how we recognize our independence. So again, taking these things away from an individual is not an easy task at hand. And so, yes, our helpline is there to help you. I will share that for our family, my father would stay up very late at night, all night. And of course, all of those infomercials that were on television. Well, what we were able to do was to provide him with a personal checking account that had about $200 a month in it. Now, he had, you know, not everybody can do this, but fortunately for us, my father was able to spare that, right? And so he had that account, and that was his money. That was what we did with that, rather than giving him access to everything else. And then my another family member became the financial power of attorney and took care of all of the rest of the true bills and things.
So. This happened with my uncle, who my aunt, you could look at, you know, the 5 years that she was his immediate caretaker, and the gray that she, and the aging that she experienced in the before and after. But he was convinced that they had a bank account at a certain bank, and that the bank had taken their money. And she fought this for a long time, and she finally called the bank and said, I'm going to bring him down there. We haven't banked with you in 30 years, but he's convinced this is there. Would you please tell him we don't have an account with you?
Right.
And they said, by all means. And so she drove him down there. He got out of the car, walked in, and stood in line to the teller, and then asked his question. And they said, no, sir, we don't have an account for you. We show an account 30 years ago, but not now. And that's all it took. He heard it from them, and he never mentioned it again. He was satisfied that they weren't taking his money because he didn't have an account there.
But I want to reiterate what Brian had said about the importance of getting your pre-planning in order. This is why, if you can talk to an elder attorney, that's who you want to see, to discuss both the medical and the financial power of attorneys that are available, planning after death so that an individual is able to be part of that process. It will make it so much easier for the moment that you are in right now, but also afterwards, because the family is then able to have the confidence that they're doing what mom or dad, brother or sister wanted, and it can bring great peace during a time when a lot of decisions are made out of emotion. And so it can really help.
And that's really important for dignity, I think. If a person's able, yes, before, in early stages, to say, these are the things that I want, this is how I feel about my life and my possessions and all of those things, and then people are able to honor that, that's another way of bringing dignity, right, to them through a process that may not be very difficult. Mm-hmm.
Why don't we take our break? We have so much more to talk about. We only have one more segment left. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with late Patty Fink. Our guests are Brian Parman, Deborah Adams, and Portia Cantrell. And we'll be back with more right after this.
Hey, guys. I'm CeeDee Kirvin, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
And this is Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Patty Fink. Our guests are from the Alzheimer's Association, from C.C. Young Living Center, and Portia Cantrell, who can't decide where she's from. And she's just looking at me and just shaking her head. The week that I had to take away my father's bank accounts, mail, his apartment, his car, put him into a memory care facility. I did all of that in 1 week. It was one of the worst weeks of my life. I didn't drag it out, though. Those are that. If you're dealing with Alzheimer's, you know what I'm talking about because you've done this. And it's just a terrible thing to do, but it was mandatory. I had to do these things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you feel so guilty. It's your parents. You're taking away, you know, I'm taking away my father's car. And I had to, of course. Tell us what the difference is between regular Alzheimer's and, I don't know if that's how you would refer to it, and early onset Alzheimer's.
So younger onset Alzheimer's is that which is diagnosed to an individual who is younger than 65 years of age. And only about 3% of those impacted with Alzheimer's disease fit into this population. But it is in a very aggressive form of Alzheimer's disease typically. And usually this is where we find the genotype. That is actually impacting full families that we can identify. Yes, you have the gene that will give you Alzheimer's disease. Again, this is only in a very small minority of those that have Alzheimer's disease. There are studies going on right now to see what we can do using this genotype, using this population as a great pool of information and resource. But the Alzheimer's Association right now is serving people who are as young as 32 years of age.
Really?
Yes. And but typically, the majority of individuals are diagnosed after 65 years of age. And so then it goes through a progression that you'll probably hear where you've got early stage, mid stage, and then late stage. And early stage is an individual that may still be able to function. They may actually still be working for a period of time with that. And then as they get into mid stage, you see the symptoms becoming more detrimental to their everyday life. They can't function as well. They're needing help with maybe some clothing, some showering, decision making. This is where the power of attorney comes into play. And typically they're not working, and nor should they be driving at this point in time. And then the late stage is that individual that is really the disease is moving from the cognitive areas to actually impacting the physical function of the body. Because Alzheimer's disease is actually the disease that causes termination of life. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of doctors that don't label it that with that, but if you think about it, your brain is the organ in our body that tells the rest of our body what to do, mm-hmm. to digest food, to breathe air, to your heart to beat. Mm-hmm. And so when you progress to the full point of the disease, your brain has stopped telling your body to do these
things. So glad you brought that up, because it was truly the first Alzheimer's walk that I did that I actually heard. I mean, loud and clear that it can be a death sentence to people, that people die from this. And it was an eye-opener, and it was one of the reasons why I thought it was so important to bring this to the LGBT community. And I did that through the Association with Cathedral of Hope, and we started an education series, we started a support group, and just the conversation, because this is a disease that affects our community. It's members, but it affects our parents, as we've been talking about, our grandparents, friends, neighbors. And it's so important, as you, as a couple even, if one of the folks in a relationship mm-hmm. might find that these issues are coming up, to get diagnosed, to have these difficult conversations about things like the durable power of attorney and about your living will, what your wishes are, getting your mm-hmm. financial house in order, so that as a couple now it's a little bit easier that we can be married, mm-hmm. But that you can actually go and find out the medical information that you need, but you have to still have all that stuff together.
Right.
So if you're a person who's wondering about that, maybe it's a parent, maybe it's a spouse. Mm-hmm. What kind of doctor do you seek out if you suspect these signs are prevalent and you see them?
Right.
Do you go to a neurologist? How do you begin that?
So the first thing, most people are going to see their primary care physician. And if you're over 65 years of age, you have an annual wellness visit as part of your benefit. That annual wellness visit should include a mini-cog, a mental test, right? So this is where they have you draw the clock. They talk to you about the name of the president, where your mm-hmm. father was grimacing, and that type of thing. That should automatically be happening during this annual wellness. And if you are accompanying somebody and the doctor is not doing that, it is within your right, and please advocate to have that done.
So important.
Okay, it's very, very important. Then once the result of that test is what would refer you to, and just, you're right, Patty, it would be a neurologist or a psychologist, even and a psychiatrist. Those are the three key people that we would actually ask the referral to be made to. And here in Dallas, we have almost every hospital has a memory care center or memory component mm-hmm. to their geriatric department. We are very, very fortunate here to do that. Also, just in January, the Medicare, Medicaid Department of Health has approved billing for care planning and for assessment. This is something that was not done. And if a doctor, unfortunately, we do live in a world where if a doctor could not bill for it, it may not have gotten taken care of to the level that it should have. Mm-hmm. So now I can go to my neurologist and I can say, I suspect that my father has Alzheimer's disease. Could we please do an assessment? Before, they would say, I'm sorry, that's not within your benefit. Mm-hmm. Now they can do this assessment, they get reimbursed for it, and not only can they do the assessment, but they can roll that into actual care planning. And because Alzheimer's disease changes, the needs for this changes very frequently, there is no limit to the benefit of care planning. You could go to a doctor 5 or 6 times a year to talk to them about what should be our next step, what should we be doing, and the doctor is able to bill. So that is a great, great mm-hmm. benefit that people need to know about.
Should somebody who's had Alzheimer's in their family be more worried about having Alzheimer's, or it doesn't run in families particularly?
The evidence is still out on that. So whether they should or shouldn't, we do. I mean, I think all of us sitting here can say that when we forget something or can't remember a name, because we've all had this in our family, that we are part of what we call worried well. We are the people that have not mm-hmm. yet been diagnosed but wonder, is this coming down the line? So with that, I actually have done a baseline with my neurologist mm-hmm. so that I have this in place now. And I don't recommend that for everybody. It wasn't covered by insurance. It was But it was something for me I needed to do because of some symptomatic things that was occurring in my life, and I was afraid, basically. So I went ahead and took that step and had that done. But there is, unless they have the familial gene, there is not yet evidence that says just because mom has it, I'm going to have it. There are tendencies, and there's still.
So, should somebody worry about Alzheimer's if they've had it in their family? I'm kidding. That's not the question,
right?
I want to talk a little bit about LGBT caregivers. Mm-hmm. HRC did a study a number of years ago that showed that if there's a gay kid in the family, that's the one, chances are, that's going to get stuck with mom and dad, because for a number of reasons. You know, the sister is raising kids, the brother is also, you know, he has his career, not that we don't have our careers or we don't have kids, but the impression is, oh, we'll give it to,
you know,
to Patty. It's an assumption. But HRC actually did this study, and in most cases, the gay kid or the lesbian kid or the transgender kid even, and I'm saying even because that person might be straight, mm-hmm. Ended up being, more times than not, the major caregiver for the parents, or for the remaining parent, more likely. What other things should we, and because of that, we need to know about Alzheimer's, because it's absolutely running in our families. It runs in everybody's family, but chances are we're going to be dealing with it. What are some other things that LGBT caregivers should know?
Really, that's an interesting bit of information. In my family, I was fortunate that my oldest brother, who's straight, was caring for mom both financially and personally, you know, her caregiving. And he retired in the last couple of years, and it did open an opportunity for mom to move here and for us to be closer. And I have to say that it's been one of the biggest gifts for me personally to have that time with her, but I've learned so much. And I think because of my sexuality and the fact that I haven't had kids, I've kind of thought about this in a lot of ways and coped with it, realizing that it's like having a child. It's just my mom is reversing the aging process as this has progressed, and she's in the latter middle stage. She's not in the end stage that Deborah was referring to, and it's challenging. I'm fortunate to have the support of my brother who manages the financial side of things to share that with, and that I have a husband who's wonderful to share the things that we have to do. And we're fortunate that she's in a place, in a facility, where there is a team. It does sincerely take a village. And if it weren't from my friends out here in the community that came and rallied together and continue to support, because it changes your life. You know, I'm no longer able to be at all the different events that are happening because my weekends are often my first priority. It's my mom, you mm-hmm. know, making sure that she's fine, that she has what she needs. And the stress that takes on you, even when you have it as easy as I do, which isn't everyone's story, it can be challenging.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier that there was a support group mm-hmm. at Cathedral of Hope.
Yeah.
You know, I have a neighbor down the street who's taking care of her 102-year-old mother, and we were talking, and I said, "How's your mom?" And she goes, "Oh, she's fine."
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes. It's everybody else in the family right. that kind of, mm-hmm. you know, is managing all of the caregiving.
Or, yeah.
It was such a telling statement for mm-hmm. her to say, mm-hmm. you know, because she was, in fact, fine.
Right.
It was everybody else that was kind of coping and struggling to carry on with their jobs and, you know, in life while being a caregiver, and it takes a big toll.
It does. And it's interesting that in our support group at the cathedral, we actually ceased it, and we're working with CC Young and with the Alzheimer's Association for different outlets because people weren't coming, actually. That was quite interesting to me. They'd come when we do educational sessions because they wanted to learn more, but they're so buried in what's going on with them. Or there's a stigma that's out there associated with identifying yourself, and they're like, oh, I don't have that. Mm-hmm. And it's been really an interesting journey to try to figure out how do you support folks.
I never think of it as, I don't think of it, it's a disease. Mm-hmm. Why would there be a stigma? You know, it's not like, hey, I'm going to go out and get Alzheimer's. That's so silly that there's any kind of stigma attached to anything
about
their jobs,
like this. Insurance, you know, all of that.
Yeah.
And sometimes people pull away, especially when they're not educated because they don't know what to do or they don't know what to say.
The stigma is very real.
I'm not questioning that it's there. I'm saying it's a disease.
I think in the LGBT community, David, I was talking to you about this earlier, is that Alzheimer's research and Alzheimer's as a disease is being accepted more now as a disease, similar to what the AIDS epidemic did years ago when it first hit the world. I mean, there was all this stigma about it. We didn't know enough to not have stigma placed to it, right? So as research was able to give accurate information to the public, then the stigma decreased a bit, and so the world was able to work through their own issues about all of this and that disease. Well, the same thing is happening with Alzheimer's disease. And that's one of the reasons, fighting the stigma is one of the main reasons why the association does the Walk to End Alzheimer's. So I do want to, before the end, make sure that I share that information.
Give the information right now while we're thinking of it.
Good.
We only
Thank
have a
you.
Few minutes left.
Anyone that is connected with Alzheimer's disease, worried, or just wants to support others, coming out to the Walk to End Alzheimer's is one of the ways to help raise awareness and to let people know, I support families, I support caregivers, I support research, I support law. And so here in Dallas, we have a Walk to End Alzheimer's downtown on October 7th. We are anticipating about 12,000 people to go. I know, it's really cool, at the Dallas City Hall. And again, that one's October 7th. But our chapter is also doing a walk in the Grandscape area at the Colony for anyone that might live up there. We have one on September 30th there at Grandscape. We also have another one September 30th downtown in Ennis. If anybody's out in the, you know, southern south. Area, the south area. And then I'm driving out to Longview on the 23rd, and we'll be doing the Walk to End Alzheimer's out there. So,
the one on October 7th, what time is it?
The actual, get there by 7:30. We do ask that
in the morning?
Yes. We ask that you go online at alz.org/walk, register. Okay.
And Patty will be there at 7:30 a.m.
You're going to be there at 7. I'll have coffee for you ready to go.
There'll
be food trucks out there. It's a big, it's a celebration in some respect. But it's also a walk. It's our leading fundraiser. This is how we raise the money to do the research. And there will be over 600 walks this
And where
year.
Are we as far as the research goes? And we have about 2 minutes.
As far as the research goes, we are very hopeful. We're in a much more hopeful place than we were 6 years ago when I started with the Alzheimer's Association. Mm-hmm. In fact, just this last July, we had the Alzheimer's International Conference in London. 7,000 researchers came together, and they shared what was happening with that. And we are actually finding things that we can do to prevent and encourage brain health, which in the long run will potentially stave off Alzheimer's disease. That is the hope. That's what the research is showing. Mm-hmm. So exercise, come walk with us, eat right, and stay involved, stay engaged, and just join us.
Okay, so what can you do to help prevent? And you just...
Right. So dietary is very, very important, the diets that we are eating. So a Mediterranean-type diet, lots of fruits and vegetables, and whatever's kind of those diets that we've talked about, good for the heart, is also good for the head. We have evidence to show that. Also, the most important thing is exercise. So getting in your brisk walk, 20 minutes a day for 5 days a week is very, very important because you're dealing with the circulation issues when you're talking about exercise. exercise. It's very important. Staying socially active. When you have Alzheimer's disease, the first thing you want to do is go hide.
Yep, sequester.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so it's very important that you do not do that and you stay socially engaged with individuals. And there's a lot of different ways to do that that the association can help you with. And then cognitively stimulating your brain. So learning a new language, learning to play an instrument, learning new things. Crossword puzzles, if you've always done crossword puzzles, are not going to be the answer for you. If you've never done them and you enjoy them, they might be great, but it's more about learning new things in life that
so
can help that.
So eat lots of fried food and...
I mean, you have to be
just
real.
Just flunk the test,
oh,
David.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, my brother-in-law's mom lived to be 97, and she kept up with baseball, and she started doing the fantasy baseball, and she loved it. She
says, we are out of time.
Okay.
Next week is Parade Week. The festival's in Reverchon Park on Saturday, and on Sunday is the parade down Cedar Springs. We'll be on the air as the parade begins. You can listen to us as you're approaching, going to the Cedar Springs area to join the parade. And for all of us here at Lambda Weekly, we'll see you next week.
Thank you.